Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, October 26, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla Ruckert's husband, the scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website, bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hi, Carla and Jim. How are you doing today?
Hey.
Doing very well.
Okay. Well,
we are getting ready to go to Philadelphia next weekend, and we're with great interest watching the advent of Hurricane, is it Sandy?
Right.
It's like, hello, are we going to have power? Are there flights going? But, hey, it's one of those things where, you know, this guy has invited, 150 people to this great big party, a lot of guests. And people that are experts in various fields. It's a unique concept where he basically has the guests focus on various questions that he wants to know the answer to, and has, you know, it's been engaging his interest. And so he thought, well, why not, you know, ask the experts? And so he offered to, you know, pay all the bills for a nice, you know, eating, all the bills are paid for eating and for the hotel and for the flight there or the drive there, whatever. And I at first said, well, you know, I really don't think I can go because I need, you know, a hospital bed, I need a potty by the bed, I need this, I need that, you know. I'm really, it's probably better if you just forget about me. And he said, absolutely not. And so he's going to get all that stuff. He has gotten all that stuff, I suppose, by now. And I hope very much that we get to go, don't you, Jim?
Oh, yeah. It'll be a lot of fun, providing the weather provides a way.
Okay. Well, let's hope. Let's hope that there's a calm and that isn't, the storm isn't too rough and that you have a safe journey. Absolutely.
Well, I've put St. Patrick on it, you know, and he's pretty good with travel-related things, or has been for me. So I'm feeling that it's all going to be just fine.
Okay. Well, I'm sure it will be.
Yeah.
And I know you guys are going to have fun, off for an adventure. So needless to say, that means no show next week, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. We're here every Friday at 8 o'clock Eastern, and no show next Friday.
Yeah,
what is
we
that
try never to miss it, but there's nothing. I said we really try never to miss a show, but this is too good to miss. So we're gonna
absolutely
gonna play.
Yeah, that would be Friday, November 2nd, no show, and we'll be back on the 9th. Okay, well, great. I hope you guys have fun. Well, we're going to go to the opening riff tonight. It's from Kuo from February 15th, 1998. There is a yearning within each seeker for home. And when the angel or the guardian or the guide or guidance itself is sought, there is that hope of a letter from home, of a pat on the back, or a hint of what the situation is from an older and wiser relative. Whatever the way you choose, you are seeking that home when you seek guidance. You are sensing that you are on a journey, and you are asking for some information closer to the source and ending of that journey. Be aware that you may be someone else's guide. Be aware when questions are asked of you, for that which is love may speak through you, if you are empty enough and clear enough. Be aware that others may be your guide for a moment without any conscious intention or with conscious intention. It makes no difference, for what is happening is that vibration is harmonizing with vibration or not, and connections are being made or not. Thusly, if with patience you attend to the present moment, and desire as purely as possible to know the love of the one Creator, that which is yours to do and that which is yours to be shall rhythmically come to you and express to you. And when you feel resistance, stop. Wait. Be aware. There is something that you need to know. Make space for that knowledge. Go into the silence and ask. Then be prepared to wait for that moment when the heart knows and there is no more doubt. May love always be reflected in love for each of you, and may all of those difficulties that are such good teachers find their ways into your heart as blessings indeed.
All right. This is a piece of channeling that has so many arrows in the air that it's just so rich. I know everyone wants their guidance, desperately sometimes wants to be able to communicate with their own higher self or the Holy Spirit or whatever we choose to call that agency that is our guidance. And it is quite possible to do that. And I do work with people to help them to do that. But very quickly said, it's simply a matter of knowing that there is a communication that's going on. And sitting down, preparing yourself, setting your intention to ask God for guidance and connect with your inner guidance. And then just writing down what your first question is going in. And then as you get an impression, write that down. That is the communication from your guidance. It comes quickly. It comes intuitively. And it almost feels like your own mind. But when you read it later, you can see that it's a different personality than you. It's such a blessing to have guidance. We need guidance, and a lot of times we search in the outer world for guidance. We search for guidance in books, in weekend seminars, in gurus that have helped other people. It's often that people find themselves being helped by this or that author or guru or whatever. But the clearest and deepest information always will be that information that it comes from within yourself. And you've given that to yourself. You have that. You always have that. So guidance is not just from within. You can count on there being guidance in the world around you if you keep your eyes open. I have a lot of times seen a street sign that pointed something to me about what I was thinking at the time, or a song on the radio in the car when you're going someplace. There are random ways to get guidance from nature. Have you ever examined the world of nature for your totems, for the tree that speaks to you, for the bird, for the animal that speaks to you? There are so many ways that the creation talks to you, and all of those things are just hoping that you'll notice. And when you notice, when you start to get it, when you start seeing these synchronicities, they multiply, and it becomes an amazing, very rich environment, because within you, you have guidance, and all day as you're going through your chores and your duties, you get guidance. And then you go to sleep and you have dreams, and if you sit and ponder those dreams or keep a dream journal, do some work on that, it is usually fairly fruitful for people. There's a trick to that, too, of not waking up fully when you keep a dream journal. You keep a little light by your bed, and you have a very small flashlight, and then you keep a notebook. So you write down everything you can remember about the dream, because if you wake all the way up, you'll lose most everything. It works for most people. It didn't actually work for me, because my dream world is so rich that, and I have horrible handwriting. So I would find myself going to sleep for 15 minutes and waking up almost immediately, and I'd be writing for like a half an hour to get all the information about this dream down on paper, and then I would go to sleep for another 15 minutes, and then another dream would wake me up, and I'd write it down. And it just went on all night. I mean, not at first, but once my subconscious knew that it had, you know, that I was listening to it, it was like, open the doors, Charlie. The horses are coming out. It was amazing. Okay. The next thing that it says, be aware that you may be someone's guide. This has been something that I've had to deal with for decades because of the fact that I'm a channel. And I know that people read the channeling sessions, and they often, you know, have told me they find help therein. And it's a very humbling thing to hear that. You always want to serve. You desperately, you know, with all your heart, want to serve. And every time I finish a channeling session, I have the uneasy feeling that, oh gosh, you know, it was patchy and it was not so good. I could have done better. And, you know, I just felt like I didn't get everything. And I'm really beating myself up. And then people will tell me the opposite. And I can hear, you know, when I listen to it, it sounds smooth. It sounds, the information's good. And absolutely amazing to me, but I'm delighted that it works that way. So, you have to slow down, and you have to set your intention to connect with your guidance, and then you have to wait. Waiting is very important, waiting without impatience. Waiting in the sure knowledge that things will settle down and that guidance will come. It always does. Even if you think that what you're writing down doesn't make much sense, write it down. Later, when that experience is all over, you can go back and look at it and see, does this make sense? And you may find yourself surprised.
Okay, well, Carla, you know, the Native Americans and other cultures over time, you know, they always had shamans and really paid a lot of attention to the dream world. And they often would talk about how this world that we're in can be viewed as a dream world. In other words,
yes.
if an eagle, if they saw an eagle flying, that was a symbol for them, just as if they had seen it in their dream. And you always see books on dreams and interpretation, and they say, well, if you see this in your dream, you know, it means a certain thing or whatever. But now that so many people are living in the city and they're so cut off from nature, do you think that their environment is still going to talk to them in the same way that it would if they were living out in nature? Or do you think it's important that they need to be in nature in order to be in tune with those symbols that may come their way?
Well, certainly Jim's early training thought that it was important to get into a natural environment.
Oh, it's much easier in the natural environment because you have a basically a perpetual meditative state within which you are operating, and you can become more aware of those portions of the environment that are speaking to you, that you're aware of the questions that you're asking, that you are open to answers from every possible direction, and there's not so much noise, confusion, chaos, and static to interfere with the reception of this information. But I believe it can happen in the city just as well. You have to be a lot sharper, though. You've got to be much more attentive. You have to have a will that's very strong and that you really want to know these things. And you have to be able to tune out a lot of the static that is so prevalent in the city that makes it more difficult to find the real tunes and the melodies that are playing, and then not the cacophony of horns honking and people talking and airplanes overhead. So, yeah, I think it's possible in the city. It's possible anywhere, but it's just much easier in the primal nature environment.
One example that comes to me is Jim mows the lawn and takes care of the landscaping for a church here in Anchorage. And one time when I was feeling as though I was really having a hard time, and it was when I first started with this operational problem of not being able to close the operational wound. And it's been going on for a year and a half now, but this was the beginning of that, and I didn't expect it to be going on even for 3 months. And I was asking myself what's going on. And Jim came home and he said, you know, it's the funniest thing, but there's a sunflower that's growing on St. Luke's roof. You remember that?
I do.
It grew to quite some height, and it thrived in this little bit of soil. And I thought, well, if it can grow in 2 inches of soil, completely cut off from the rest of the sunflower breed, by golly, in this hospital bed, I'm just going to do fine. I mean, you know, you just have to pay attention to what's coming across the board.
Jim, you mentioned the static and the cacophony of the city. Do you think there's any symbolic meaning to the cacophony itself? I saw a book on someone had come up with a modern tarot based on the city, and the archetypes all had to do with computers and TVs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I thought so too. I thought that was kind of interesting. What do you think of that?
Well, it seems to reflect the basic human condition where we're trying to consciously become aware of what exists in our subconscious, because there is so much richness there that we seem to be cut off from. And by creating an urban environment in which there is so much going on, so much information, so much energy, so much to distract one, it really reflects what we're doing as individual seekers when we try to get past that static and over-information, over-activity of the conscious mind and relax ourselves into a meditative state where we can focus ourselves into the subconscious and begin to access the great wealth of information and direction and wisdom and love and guidance that exists in our subconscious minds. So I think the city is a perfect reflection of what all of us are trying to do as seekers of truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like before, when people out in nature might see an eagle, now people are noticing 11:11 on their alarm clocks.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And I was just going to say that that's one of the things that's been happening to me recently is a lot of 11:11s. And, you know, I think that's a master number. And, you know, you need to pay attention to things like that. 11 is the first master number, 11, 22, and 33. So we're not going to see 22 and 33 on a 12-hour clock. We'll see it on a military clock where they have 24 hours. But you can see the 11:11. And I think that it's always a wonderful sign that says, pay attention, something good just happened. What you were thinking, that was really good. What were you thinking right then? You know, pay attention. I think that if you're in the primal environment, certainly you have the strongest connections to your unconscious mind. But if you take it as true that you can work with whatever environment you have, and you take it as equally true that the richness of your internal environment is endless, then you can see where any system worked with well is going to take you into the world within, the world of fairies and goblins, and of course Halloween coming up, we have to bow to ghosts and so forth, and realize, you know, believe that we can thrive. Maybe it's not as easy, and a lot of people at some point in their life say, I'm going to change this. I'm not going to live on the 34th floor anymore. I'm going to, you know, try to get out in the country. But so many of us don't really have that luxury. We have to go where the jobs are. What's a working man going to do if there aren't any plumbing jobs, if he's a plumber, or there aren't any electrical wiring jobs? You know, what's a technician going to do if he is in a place where there aren't enough people that have computer problems for him to set up a business helping people with computers? You know, that basically people have to pay the bills, and not everybody has the luxury of moving out into the natural environment. I mean, what is a natural environment? We had an unusual thing happen to us. We had a deer die in our yard. Now, at first, it kind of looked like a big rock, because you don't think of deers as being part of an exurban environment. But we've had a lot of building out this way, as is true of any city. You know, the urban sprawl is sprawling, and a lot of green space is being taken up. And where do the animals go? And this deer didn't look wounded, didn't look like it was sick. It was a little bit thin, but it didn't look like it had starved to death. It's a mystery as to why this absolutely untouched, very pretty doe, a female deer, died in our yard. And we found out that the city, our little city of Anchorage, wouldn't pick it up because it was on private property. Well, I mean, you'd have to dig a grave with, a forklift, you know, if you wanted to bury the thing. And we had no way to handle it, and we maneuvered it out into the road, because the city is responsible for the roadways, and that way we managed to handle the problem. But surely we're not the only ones who have had this experience. But what I'm saying is the urban environment and the country environment kind of blend for a lot of people living in the suburbs because of the fact that there is such a live population of fox and deer and turkey. And what all do we have around here, Jim?
Groundhogs, possum, coon, skunks, hawks.
Yeah.
Buzzards.
We just have a lot of, you know, where you wouldn't expect to see. We've got one hawk family that comes back every year and has a family on our land. We've got a tall, is it a tree or is it a pole?
It's a tall sycamore tree.
Sycamore tree that it likes. And we're always glad to hear that keening call of our hawks coming back. I'm not sure even in the city if there's any clear separation because, you know, you've got alligators in the sewers and other urban delights. But I think it's always a crowded environment where if you just can pay attention to a larger percentage of the things that are going on around us, we can make connections that help us to see more and more into ourselves. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to become ourselves. And that's more of a challenge than just about any existential challenge that there is. You know, who am I? It's a very deep question.
Okay, thank you, Carla. I want to let everyone know we are listening to In the Now with Carla Ruckerts and Jim McCarty, and you are welcome to call in live if you'd like to ask a question. Please call the live line, 646-595-2294, 646-595-2294, and be sure to press the 1 key if you want to join the show. We're going to go to a question from Cyan. Cyan asks, Carla, I would really appreciate your thoughts on something that has been bothering me immensely and causing a great deal of anxiety. I find myself obsessing on this. I'm really glad I can ask a seasoned spiritual seeker, researcher, and channeler such as yourself questions like this. I greatly appreciate you providing this open forum. My question is meditation safe? I've heard that meditation can open you up to negative influences. I've also heard that it is the single most important thing you can do to protect yourself against negative influences. I'm really confused and find myself having much anxiety going into meditation. Is it possible, for example, that the realizations and images that come into one's mind during meditation could be negatively inspired? Or do they come from the subconscious and higher self only? I am even paranoid about living in the present moment because I'm thinking that if I have stillness of mind, that it could allow negative entities to influence me. But I've also heard that it can protect you from that. I am so confused, and I just want to meditate. Please, any info you could give on this subject would be so appreciated. So much love and blessings to you, Carla. Thank you. This is from Cyan.
Oh, thank you so much, Cyan, and blessed be to you. Meditation is a big subject. I think that the most helpful thing you can do for yourself as you go into meditation is to set your intention. I talk a lot about setting your intention, and that's because intention is what action is in the physical world. In the metaphysical world, it's about what you intend, what you hope, what you are, you know, dreaming into reality. And as Monica said, it's very easy to look at your waking life as a dream, as well as your life when you're asleep. Set your intention. Protect yourself by aligning yourself with the highest and best that you know. So an intention that you set would be something like, I set my intention to serve the Infinite Creator and to seek the Infinite Creator by going into the silence and by seeking those energies that are of love and of light and of those things that are of the Creator and the Creator of love, the Creator of consciousness. This is what I'm seeking, and I set my intention now. And then, just let it be. When I began meditating in 1962, as a daily thing, I found myself getting sick to my stomach. I would sit down and I would instantly get sick to my stomach. Well, I persisted, and after about, a month of this, maybe, the next thing that happened to me was that I started seeing gremlins. Bless you, sweetheart. And the boogeyman, you know, all the things that we, you know, are afraid when we're kids that we're going to see under the bed if we look, you know, and we don't want to look in the closet and, you know, like that. We go, Daddy, Mom, you come and look under the bed in the closet, I'm afraid. And there they were, you know, these little, not a, you know, well formed or anything, but sort of vaguely, I guess you'd say, I don't know if it's a word or not, but you just felt ooky. So after about, probably 6 months of it, you know, receding a little bit all the time, it just disappeared. And later when I was doing channeling, I asked what was going on. And the reading said that our culture did not support meditation, did not support sitting in one place without an object. If we sit in one place, which we do a lot actually, we are looking at something. You know, a lot of times when we think, well, we're really having a good time with somebody, we're actually together, but we're both looking at the TV. So, you know, it's a funny way of being together because we're not chatting, we're not going deep, we're not, you know, relating except through the television show. And, you know, I mean, you could write a great big thesis about that. But it's very rare that you see somebody just sitting in a chair. And I know I used to do it, I mean, spontaneously sometimes when I was a kid. And my mother would become very upset with me because she was, you know, a very nervy person. She was a nervous, you know, she was always doing something. She was always, you know, playing jazz or singing jazz or studying something. And she was a very active person. And finally, you know, I mean, she just finally said, Carla, if you're not going to do something, get out of the room. You're driving me crazy. That's how unusual it is for somebody simply to sit and seek the silence. You know, to me, it just felt good. It still does. It still does. So it isn't that you're in danger. You're only in danger if you happen to be extraordinarily gifted as a psychic. And if you have an unconscious intention that you're setting to have adventures, regardless of what the adventure looks like. There are some people that really love drama. And so they would, you know, get a lot of mileage out of something like, oh, I'm afraid that, you know, my experience is negative in meditation because, and they have this story to tell that was very dramatic. You don't need to hold on to your confusion. You don't need to hold on to your fear. On the other hand, I think it is as unhealthy to make yourself stop fearing something as it is to stop taking a strong medication. You know, you want to wean yourself off of it. Fear is a powerful thing. And if you're afraid of something, I think you really need to give yourself the time to, you know, think of yourself as being in kind of a trouble bubble, and, you know, you're all curled up and you're afraid. And it's like being in a cave, and they're, you know, say that it's not a complete wall in front of the cave, but it's a wall with a lot of different ways out of it, and they're sort of like hanging like the blinds in an office, you know, those vertical blinds that each one of them you can pull it and see through. And, you know, you take a few blinds out of in front of the fear cave and, you know, just do a little bit, you know, meditate for a couple minutes. And then a couple minutes more, and then when you're feeling comfortable with that, you know, do a little bit more. And give yourself a chance to reshape your expectation and to, you know, not to just force yourself and as if it was wrong to be fearful, because it's not wrong to be fearful any more than it's wrong not to be fearful. It's just what's happening. So, you know, give yourself a break. Set your intention, and you may find it very helpful if there is a group meditation class. Buddhists often have meditation classes. Wicca often has meditation classes. It just depends on where you are. It's one thing that being living in the city is very helpful in providing is more various opportunities to do different things. It's a richer environment for groups in the city because there's just more people. But I have always found that if I'm meditating in a group, the group will carry me, and I have a better meditation. Even if it's one other person that you're meditating with, it's a powerful aid to meditate with that other person, because it's not that you're leaning on each other, it's that you're in each other's auras. And the energy of consciousness, of silence, is rotating between you two. And the dynamic of the two of you is there to help. And so you're sort of each other's battery, each other's backup. And you can gain a lot from that. Jim, what do you have? What are your thoughts, Hobson?
I think in both the investigation of meditation and in dreams, the subconscious mind first, in many cases, sends up a message that we might see as being kind of confused or chaotic, or some people might interpret them as being fearful images. It's like getting rid of the static and the less important information that needs to be kind of gotten out of the way and before we get down to the real deep currents of wisdom and love that flow in the subconscious mind. So I don't think it's unusual that people might experience this from time to time, or at least in the beginning of the meditations or the exploration of dreams. It's something that just is a way of the subconscious clearing the channel, getting rid of some of this static that's built up over many years of our experience, and we just kind of have to work our way through it before we're really able to get to the information that we're seeking and that will provide us guidance on our journey as we're continuing to seek more of the knowledge of who we are and what our purpose in this life is.
Another thing that you can do to help yourself ease into meditation is to visualize something. People have often found it helpful to visualize a beautiful thing like a rose, a single perfect rose. And of course, you know that the Catholics spend a lot of time meditating in front of the Stations of the Cross, just thinking through Jesus's last walk that ended in the tree of life, and that's helpful. Some brands of magicians work visualizing simple shapes, a color and a shape, a black triangle, a red circle, a blue rectangle in order to discipline their mind to quiet. My friend Gary, when he began meditating, would count his breaths. And I have found help not in counting my breaths, but in visualizing in breaths as breathing in the love and the light of the infinite creator, and the out breath breathing out all the stuff that was tired and used up in us, so that we're renewing ourselves by the breath. And, you know, you can see the light coming in and the darkness moving out. Monica, you had a question.
Yeah, I was just going to comment. When I read that question, it reminded me of my experience having come from a Christian background of the more evangelical flavor of Christianity. And I had an experience with I had chosen a midwife who was a Christian when I was pregnant. And just before my due date, she insisted that my husband and I sit down and watch this video, and it was all about the hidden dangers of the new age and everything, because she saw that we were, you know, vegetarians and did yoga and things like that. And she said, you know, basically it was saying everything from acupuncture to vegetarianism was satanic. And I'm just wondering if maybe that's where this question might come from, because I know a lot of people that came from a Christian background or maybe are Christian and maybe into this sort of thing as well, might be very confused, because they're hearing their pastors tell them, don't get into meditation. It's, you're going to open yourself up to demons and things like that. And it's on a lot of Christian websites. There's a lot of fear associated with it.
There is, and it's always puzzled me, because, I mean, if you think about it, what was Jesus asking the disciples to do but pray with him 1 hour? You know, 1 little hour, you know, could you just sit in the silence with me? I'm going to have a bad day tomorrow, you know, like that. But, and of course, what are the prophets doing? How would you describe that activity of and then the Lord said, you know, and then, I mean, what makes prophesying different from channeling? It's always puzzled me. You know, is it, if it happened a long time ago, it's okay, but if it happens now, it's satanic. My brother is a very Christian, and I had tons of trouble with him begging me, please, you know, on my life to stop channeling because I was going to go to the devil. And it was very painful to me to listen to this. I just, you know, and I would say, but Tommy, I think that this is what the Lord has asked me to do in this life. And he said, well, that's impossible. You know, it's like not respecting me whatsoever because of the fear had just got hold of him. Now, he's not like that anymore, but there was some strong stuff that I had to do in order to alter his behavior. I didn't care about what he believed. I mean, I think you can't mess with somebody else's belief. Nobody's right, nobody's wrong when it comes to questions like this, but you can alter someone's behavior so that you don't get hurt every time you see somebody. You know, and I just did it by refusing to see that person until he stopped doing this to me every time. And finally he promised, you know, for a while he thought it was his responsibility to do it, and he had to say, no, I need to, you know, change you. It's part of, you know, I need to save you. And finally he saw that he didn't. And it was a great blessing to me that he released me from that. And so now we're great friends. And he himself has said, you know, that they were talking in his Bible class. Well, gee, you know, what is, you know, he said in this little innocent Tommy voice, he said, gee, do you think that the prophets were channeling? And I'm going, yeah, I do. And it was wonderful to hear him say that. But, I mean, he's a mature spiritual person at this point. And, you know, he doesn't always get it. His behavior, like all of our behavior, is sometimes far from pure. But his intention is to be pure. And, of course, that's the main thing.
Excellent. Thank you, Carla and Jim. We have time for probably just one or two more questions. The next one is from DSPDX. Are there infinite realities regardless of the one we experience?
Certainly. There are infinite realities, including the one we experience or the ones we experience. The nature of reality is such that it is infinitely permeable and infinitely malleable. In other words, you can see through one reality to another. You can link anything to anything. You can say relative to about any two things. And if you work hard enough, you can find ways in which those two things are alike. But, you know, before losing yourself in the confusion of this infinite array of things and, you know, well, what's true? Everything is true to the extent that the person visualized it and lived it. The desire to live a true life, a genuine life, an authentic life is that desire to go deeper, to go through the masks down to deeper masks and then through those masks to even deeper masks, because I'm not sure that we ever go through the last mask and suddenly say, okay, there I am. I think there's always going to be the next realization. But that does not disturb me. I mean, I think it's an exciting truth that there's always another bend in the road. And we don't have to live in a world where there's a heaven that is static that we get to. And okay, that's it. You know, there's nothing more to learn. Let's sit down and, you know, cool our feet, have some iced tea, and, you know, play solitaire. I mean, I just don't think that it's like that. I think that it's a very exciting thing to explore the multiple realities that are capable of being seen in our relationship with any other person or in our reading any inspired work whether it's fiction or metaphysics or philosophy or religion, whether it's lore. I love stories, the stories that indigenous people create and the stories that any group of populations will create. There are urban myths that are created that are just as interesting, I think, in their way, and relate just as much to deeper masks that we wear. You know, when we're trying to find out about ourselves, we need not to be appalled by anything because we are everything. So whatever we find out, we need to be able to open our arms to it and accept it, and then to ask it to let us redeem it in love.
Okay.
That's the one thing that is, I won't say static because it's infinite, but the love of the infinite creator is that thing from which all sprang. And it is that thing which we all have in common. So when we are all meditating, we are all more or less in a state of relationship to consciousness, and that is a very real commonality between us. I think it's how we go from being a social complex in third density to a social memory complex in fourth density.
Okay, thank you. And did you have anything to add to that, Jim, or should I go to the next question?
Why don't we go to the next question?
All right. This is a composite question from some of the topics on the Bring Forth Forum. Do we have soul families? And do you think it's important to be with our soul families during this time of transition?
We do have soul families. We certainly do. I'm not sure how important it is that we be with our soul families. I think that thinking like that is bound to distress us. I don't think we need to worry about it. I think that when we were planning this incarnation, we planned redundancy into the plan. In other words, if we completely miss the boat and we miss a chance to do something that we love to do that's going to serve the infinite creator and be our service to humanity, we do not need to distress ourselves because something else will come along. I am absolutely certain of it. When I was a kid, I was a folk singer. I loved to sing folk songs, and I had been doing it since I was 13. And when I was 17, I began doing it for money. This was back in the days of Peter, Paul, and Mary. And as a matter of fact, we got asked, my partner and I in song, got asked to open a series of concerts for Peter, Paul, and Mary in their very first tour before they had really gotten popular. And it was a chance of a lifetime. And my husband, he had insisted we get married because it would be wrong to travel together and not be married. you know, it was crazy, but, you know, I really wanted to sing. And I said, okay, so we got married. And he put his guitar up and said, I'm not going to sing anymore. When somebody came up to him and asked him for an autograph, that did it. That was all of the fame and fortune he wanted. He put his guitar up and he never sang again. I mean, you know, in a gig for money. He never sang professionally again. He was one of the most talented people I've ever known. But he didn't want to do it. And I was, you know, people said, you know, you can sue him for breach of contract. And I'm like, oh, that's going to help the marriage out a lot, you know. So I just, you know, I felt sorry for him. I mean, he was missing the, you know, he was crazy. I mean, this wasn't the only thing that he didn't, you know, pick up on. He didn't pick up on any of his opportunities. He just sat there and was miserable for the whole time we were married. It was really nice when he decided that he would be happier without me. I said, oh, good. I didn't tell him that, but I was like, oh, that's going to feel so good when it stops. And, okay, so, you know, it wound around, and here I am doing something I love and something that people tell me helps. And, you know, if I hadn't done that for him and hadn't done a few other things that were totally crazy, people thought, but, you know, I thought it was right, spiritually speaking, and did it, I wouldn't have ended up with Don Elkins coming into my life as a major partner, both in my personal life and in my professional life. And he was the one that asked me to channel. So, hey, you know, the road is long, and it winds and it turns, and there's redundancy built into the plan. So don't worry about being with your soul family, because if you need to be with your soul family, then you'll hook up with one or another. You know, you will have built these opportunities into your life. And, you know, pay attention to how you feel about people when you meet them. If you get this shock of recognition and you find that you're able to work with this person and you understand this person where other people don't, well, you know, these are signs that you have been together before. This is very important in spiritual work to twig to that and to follow that and trust it. Some of us are destined to work alone for whatever reason. Some of us feel alone even if we're in the midst of a soul family. So it's a wonderful thing to be with us, part of the soul family, and I think Jim and I both feel that we are, wouldn't you say?
Definitely, yeah.
But I don't think it's necessary. I think it's just a great thing when it works out.
I used to think in terms of karma versus dharma, with karma being, mm-hmm. you know, you have like an ex-boyfriend of mine that, you know, we weren't really, you know, meant to be together. It was just tying up loose ends from past lives, whereas
right.
dharma was working together on some positive, you know, some positive mission in this life. But do you think there's really any difference? I mean, isn't it all just catalyst or?
No, I do think there's difference, and I think you're mm-hmm. smart to point it out. I think that I know Ra said one time, or was it Ra, or was it another source that said that we had balanced karma, that all three of us, Don and Jim and I, our karma was balanced. We didn't have any karma unless we decided to cook up some in this incarnation.
Oh, yeah.
And
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I think that's in, isn't it?
It's raw material, yeah.
So I think there is a vast difference between the karma and the dharma. And I think that sometimes you are tying up loose ends from a past life. And what you need to remember if you're in a situation that you think is karmic is that forgiveness is what stops the wheel of karma. Not just forgiving the other person, but forgiving yourself for being such an idiot as to get involved in the first place. It's really important to forgive yourself.
And we're just about out of time here, but just one last quick comment. When you're with, say, a new, like, say someone gets into a new relationship and they feel this really strong pull, and they often think, oh, that means we're soulmates, or, you know, sometimes it might actually be that there's a strong karmic connection. Do you have any suggestion on how to know the difference? Or do you think it's important? Well, it is important to know the difference. You just said that. But how do you know the difference?
Well, I think that you know the difference by how it feels. If you begin to feel that distressed in a way that is specific to you, and you see this particular thread of, you know, things happening between the two of you, that why does it suddenly jump to being so important? Why is it suddenly so central? You know, why does somebody start acting so crazy? I mean, look at DeWitt and me, the fellow that was my starter husband. We worked together beautifully, but he took the precise thing that I wanted the most and took it away. And even things that were not so important to me, a perfect job, a perfect other relationship than he, which I had found after, you know, we were separated, and he took them away. And he was a pattern of this, making me as miserable as possible. And, you know, I didn't react to it after the first huge, you know, blow, which was the refusal to sing with Peter, Paul, and Mary in concert. You know, you can't really top that. And, you know, after that, it was just, okay, well, there it is again. And, you know, I just, you know, pulled up my shorts and got on with my life. I was a very happy librarian and loved my job and loved the kids. And I was a school librarian and loved everything about my life. And if I had a crazy husband at home and he wasn't working and he was constantly depressed, well, you know, we all have something. You know, I couldn't do a thing about it. And so I just, you know, shrugged my shoulders and went on. And it didn't affect me very much after the first big blow.
Well, I think that was really profound what you just said, that you recognized that pattern. That's very valuable there. We are actually out of time, Carla and Jim. Thank you so much. It's always such an honor to work with you. And I want to let everybody know we will not have a show next Friday. We are normally here every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. No show on November 2nd because Carla and Jim are going to be off on an adventure. And we'll be back on Friday, November 9th at 8 p.m. Eastern. And check out llresearch.org. and to get the transcripts and the publications that LL Research offers, and bringforth.org, bring the number 4th.org, and we will see you on November 9th.